Okay, now I might start by asking you if you could just introduce yourself and tell me your name, discipline, and place of work.
Hi, my name's Iona Novak. I originally trained in occupational therapy and these days have a full-time research job at the Cerebral Palsy Alliance in the Research Institute.
And my name is Lani Campbell and I originally trained as a speech pathologist and I am now a full-time PhD student at the University of Notre Dame.
Thank you. So I'll start by first asking you what research findings you've been implementing in practice.
The sorts of research findings we've been looking at is actually quite global. So 70% of our clients have cerebral palsy. So a resource which I'll let Lani talk about that she developed was a Wikipedia where we appraised the top 700 articles in cerebral palsy and gave them a colour coding about whether it was green, effective intervention, use this approach, red, high quality evidence showing it's ineffective or harmful, don't use this approach, or yellow, everything else, so perhaps there's not enough research, there's zero research, or it's conflicting research. And so what we did was had this simple colour-coded system that provided a common language between clinicians, families and managers about all of the intervention approaches typically used in cerebral palsy across the disciplines.
So an example of what a therapist might look up is, for example, if you were a physiotherapist and you were seeing a child with cerebral palsy, then you might think about doing some strength training with them. So you could go to the Wikipedia library and look up strength tape training and you would come up with a green or an orange, depending on the history of it, of colour of traffic light, and you could also have a look at the abstract, the key abstracts for the articles in that area, and you could also order the full text article, and that would be delivered to you, so either electronically or would be delivered to you to your desk.
So that's across a whole state organisation?
Yes.
We're a statewide organisation with about 3,000 clients a year with cerebral palsy.
Okay. So research findings could be from trials or systematic reviews, lower levels of evidence? Or
well, if there is no green evidence positively showing something works or showing that it doesn't work, so green or red, then obviously it is going to be lower level evidence. So we didn't include lower level evidence where high level was available, but where lower level evidence was the only evidence available, then it was included and coded as orange, so people could see if they were going to use it. We actually couldn't be certain of the clinical effect with this client, so they actually at our centre needed to use an outcome measure by policy to actually measure change, whether that actually made a difference for that client. So it allowed them a decision-making process so they could actually change plans. If it wasn't working, well, maybe this evidence isn't working for this person, I could actually switch to something else.
Very nice. Okay. And what behaviours, what practices or behaviours are you expecting to change by providing this implementation strategy?
Yeah, so firstly, obviously, we wanted to change people's knowledge, as other people, health professionals' knowledge, as other people have done via workshops. But we were really interested in changing quite complex behaviour changes. So things like implementation of evidence is difficult to do for a range of reasons, but we wanted to change whether they used evidence to inform decision making about what approach they might use with a client. We wanted to change outcome measurement use, so whether they used an outcome measure or not, and whether if they did change plans in response to outcome measurement scores. So if the person was going up, we could say, well, you've achieved your goals, no more intervention required, or in fact this is in the right direction, you could progress with this at home, or actually this is not working, we need to change to another intervention approach.
And that might take me on to how did you measure change? How did you know if people were doing things differently after giving them this information?
Yeah, so firstly in terms of measuring knowledge change, Lani devised an exam which was based on published evidence, so there were right or wrong answers to actually assess knowledge about evidence in the field, and so we could actually see whether actually by intervening with a workshop and access to the Wikipedia their knowledge actually changed. That was the first thing, so it was an objective measure. The second thing we did to look at behaviour change was to develop a range of goal attainment scales that looked at behaviours of evidence and outcome measurement use in the workplace. So for example, one of the questions might have included, I use an outcome measure with clients and score of -2 might be 0 to 5% of the time. The score of -1 going towards the outcome we want is 5 to 15% of the time, or something along that line, so we could see in a what range of behaviours, and we got both the people themselves involved in the study we conducted and also their peers to rate whether or not they did these behaviours. And all the behaviours set on the scales were objective, so could be verified by another source, such as a file audit or something like that. So.
And what, so any more comments you'd like to make about strategies or interventions you've used to help change practice? So you've talked about the Wikipedia, the summaries, the green lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other things we did, a 3-day workshop. So the first 2 days of the workshop we did, it was a fairly standard professional development course, and where we introduced the idea of the Wikipedia library, and we sort of worked around a lot of clinical scenarios for the participants. So then we gave them 8 weeks, and they went away and practiced their skills. So it meant that they were also preparing a case study to bring back for the third day, which was after 8 weeks. So they had a PowerPoint template for how to present that case study. But it meant during that 8 weeks, they could practice and go away and try to implement some of the things they'd learnt in the first 2 days of the workshop, and then they came back and presented that in small groups. So that was the workshop is one of the things that we did.
And can I ask you, was the workshop about the interventions, like strengths training, for example, or was it about the meaning of different levels of evidence?
No, it really, really, it was. Look, I think the answer is both, but really,
applied.
It was very applied. So it was applied to clinical scenarios, and because they were given, they had access to the Wikipedia library. We were really teaching them how to use that Wikipedia library, and we definitely did teach them about, you know, levels of evidence and, you know,
But in context.
In the context of what they needed to do,
and
yes.
And the clinical scenarios were generated from client files, so they were real scenarios of real clients. The other things that they were supported from the workplace were that evidence-based practice and outcome measurement was validated on their role description as important features of work at our worksite. They were actually... the whole system around performance appraisal was changed so that actually getting a regrade at our centre was related to performance of outcome measurement and EBP behaviours rather than longevity of time in the workplace. Another thing that we did was...
So it's like an incentive.
Yes, we did use it as a positive incentive,
yes.
And made sure that they had things like document delivery and those sorts of practical things which do create real barriers to using evidence in the workplace.
And that probably leads me on to the second last question about any other barriers that you might have had in getting practice change using these strategies.
Yeah, I think the barriers we found at our office are the same as the literature, so people's time, people's knowledge, people's confidence, the workplace culture, and we tried to systemically address each of those barriers through this intervention approach. I think commonly we found that a barrier was that people were, if the outcome measure wasn't something they were familiar with, that they would create all sorts of constructs. So I don't think that would work for me, it works for occupational therapists but not for speech pathologists, or whatever the phrase was. And we were able to show through training and leadership mentoring of people in each professional discipline that it was possible and feasible, and over experience of time people came to understand and see that having a common team language about measurement was helpful for the clients. And so I think actually that was one of the key features that shifted their motivation, because the clients actually liked this whole team approach and seeing change from intervention together. So I did describe the process in terms of the barriers a little bit like climbing Everest for people, but people did find that when they got to the top they sort of said, oh, you're right, you know, this is better, I do actually like working this way, I didn't think I was going to, but I do.
Anything else that was an enabler or a barrier that comes
There's
to mind?
There's also been some system changes with the use of outcome measures. So when when we started to teach people in the workshops about using outcome measures, especially if it was an orange light intervention, we were saying, look, this doesn't mean you can't use it. It means that it's a good idea to measure it. What has happened since then is that using two outcome measures, which we've chosen to use across the disciplines, which are applicable for all the disciplines. That has been embedded into one of the patient forms. So it means that the clients are, so when they see a client, it means that they actually do, that they'll actually be guided through, okay, we're going to do this outcome measure. So it's,
it's a reminder.
And I was going to say, it's sort of both, because it actually is a, when they meet for a mentoring session, when the clinicians meet for a mentoring session, then they actually talk to them about whether they've done the outcome measures and look at vials.
Okay. And I guess, how did you measure overall effectiveness or effect of this?
Yeah, so we did actually look at, when we did look at this, originally we looked at the change in the whole group, and we could see a difference in a couple of things. But of course, when you look at a whole group, was it really what we did, or is it just, you know, the march of time?
The Iona effect or the Learney effect, right?
Or just plain old time. Maybe they read some McCluskey literature. We actually have now just conducted a randomised control trial, and in that we actually used one group got this type of intervention, and the other group were actually randomised to receive an intervention about professional education and about their communication skills. So we could actually look now not just at within group differences but between group differences, and we looked at that using a couple of measures. One of them was we actually used goal attainment scaling with health professionals to actually look at their behaviour change, and that was the primary outcome for that study.
And the findings? Can you talk about the findings?
With knowledge, that people's knowledge did improve, which was pleasing, which is also in line with what the literature would suggest, is that people do improve with what they know about EBP, and with their actual behaviours, so their EBP behaviours, that also improved. So the control group didn't improve as much as the experimental group. So that changed as well. And the other thing we did measure that I forgot to mention was we measured attitudes as well on an attitude scale. And attitudes didn't change in this, but which was interesting, but they started off at a very high level. Mm-hmm. So, and I think because
of the organisation.
The organisation has had a long-term aim of EBP, and so I think that it's possible they started off at a high level and that the change wasn't significant.
Yeah. And also, it didn't predict performance which was interesting in itself. So it means that by embedding things in systems and it becoming a role requirement, we actually circumnavigated whatever your attitude was it, whether it was positive or negative, it just became part of workflow.
Yes.
And that may be why it's not an important variable in the work that we've just conducted.
And both the self ratings of how people were doing with their implementation behaviour, their EBP behaviour, and the ratings that their colleagues gave them, the peer ratings, they were pretty much in line. So both said that they improved to a fairly similar degree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Iona and Lorne.
Thank you.
Thank you.